The reality is the money side is the easy side. It either makes mathematical sense or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You need to sell the business or want to sell the business. The check needs to say this. If it says this, fantastic, cash the check. If it doesn't, it's not the right deal for you. Then there's all the other stuff that comes with it.
You're listening to Bluetooth, the home services podcast featuring the top owners, marketers, and operators across the trade, bringing contractors together to uncover real problems, provide real solutions, and push the trades forward. This is Bluetooth.
Welcome back to Bluetooth, everybody. I'm your host, Brandon Doyle, and today I'm joined by Patrick Lang of Business Modification Group. Patrick, thanks for joining us
today. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, a little bit of a pop quiz for you, Patrick. What does EGIA stand for?
Electric Gas Industries Association.
What about EPIC? What does EPIC stand for?
EPIC. Educating Professionals
in?
In contracting.
Contracting, that's right. All right. All right, so we're here at EPICS, folks. Again, I'm joined by Patrick Lang of Business Modification Group. Patrick is one of the premier HVAC business brokers in the industry, so I'm super excited to have you on and have you share your expertise. I know a lot of our customers. Patrick, I did a little bit of stalking, though, on you, you're from Florida, correct?
Absolutely.
What part of Florida are you from?
I live in a little town called Horseshoe Beach.
Horseshoe Beach, and what is Horseshoe Beach famous for?
Nothing. We're in the middle of nowhere. We're on the coast, on the Gulf, but scalloping, I guess. That would be probably the big skip. Fishing and scalloping in the area is probably it.
Gotcha. Okay, and you're a Florida Gator
Absolutely.
Alumni?
Absolutely. Very, very proud of Gator alumni.
Still an avid fan?
Absolutely.
Well, I got a couple Gator questions for you here. So the Florida Gators are one of a few teams to win back-to-back national championships in college basketball. How many total teams have won back-to-back national championships?
Wow. So it's crazy you ask that. I have never been a basketball fan, and I just started watching Gator basketball probably 2 years ago.
Okay.
So I'm just learning about basketball, and I don't know why. I've just never been into it. I would guess maybe four teams?
Six. So six. You were close.
I was close.
There was Oklahoma State, Kentucky, Cincinnati, UCLA, Duke, and a wild card, San Francisco.
Wow.
I didn't know San Francisco.
I would have never guessed those teams.
I didn't even know
I would have guessed Duke and Kentucky, some of the other schools. I wouldn't have ever guessed that.
Some of the blue bloods.
Yeah.
And how many times have the Florida Gators football team been national champion?
Two times. Three.
You're right. Three times.
Three times, yeah.
Three times. And can you name the years?
So, 96.
Yep.
08. And?
There's one in between.
07?
Close. 06.
06.
96, 06, and 08.
I was there in 96 when they won.
Were you really?
The first one. Yeah. So, gotcha. I was spoiled when I was at the University of Florida. Steve Spurrier was the coach, and we would hang 70 on people every single weekend. So now I'm a season ticket holder still. My family goes. I graduated from Florida. My daughter graduated from Florida. My son is a senior at Florida. So we're pretty involved around the University of Florida, and I need to polish up my history, I guess.
That's all right. I put you on the spot a little bit. So Patrick, if you don't mind, how did you get your start being an HVAC broker?
Yeah, so kind of give you a kind of a long, drawn-out version. I was a broker already selling everything. Bars, restaurants, gas stations, you name it, I sold it. And I listed a heating and air company for sale, and I bought it. I love businesses with barrier entry. I love things that I consider a need as opposed to a want. And air conditioning in the state of Florida is more of a need than a want. And so I bought a company, ran it for 2 years, and realized that I didn't belong running a heating and air company. And so when I went to go sell it, I realized it was a small company, and I realized that if you were doing $10, $20, $30 million in sales, that people would come help you out of the woodwork. They'd line up to talk to you. If you were doing $1.5 million, $2 million in sales, it was challenging to get information. And I felt, well, if it was hard for me as a broker to get information, what's it like as a contractor to get information? So I also felt that if I sold a gas station today and a flower shop tomorrow, I couldn't help either one of those people. They're two different industries, two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, let me try just focusing on heating and air. And that first year, I just focused in the state of Florida. Then I got a call out of Georgia, then the Carolinas, and then COVID hit, and COVID was really good for my business. I could fly. I fly to Gainesville, Florida, and I could fly from Gainesville to LA round trip for $250. I was the only guy on the plane. Every seat was like first class, plenty of room in the hotels, plenty of room in the rental cars. And so I just started going nationwide, and I've been fortunate to sell over 120 companies since.
How many companies have you sold, or HVAC home service companies have you sold in your lifetime, approximately?
127 or 128. I have to look something in that range.
Gotcha.
In the last 6 years.
Gotcha. And how many last year?
23.
23. All right. And so when you and I were catching up, I got the sense you're more of an entrepreneur
yes, you're a broker,
right? But you've owned several businesses, including your own firm. So can you talk about that? I mean, you got your start in you were running a financial services company. Did you have a specialty? I mean, were you selling everything or?
So going way back, so my first business that I owned was a financial planning company. We had three offices, one in Sarasota, one in Arcadia, Florida, where we lived, and one in Sebring, Florida. And I sold that business in 2007. It just wasn't fun anymore. And I believe that you can make money doing a lot of things. And I just wasn't enjoying going to my own office. And I thought, why am I working all these hours and I have offices and staff and I didn't even like going to work. So I could have paid somebody to take it at the time. I mean, I was fortunate to sell it and I didn't even know what I was doing. So I found somebody in the industry. They bought it. I made every mistake known to man and didn't know I was making the mistake. So I didn't know who to talk to, who to ask questions of. Dipping my toe in the water in kind of home services, I bought a swimming pool service company.
That was a nice pun.
Yeah. So I traded in a suit and tie for flip flops and a tank top, as I joked, and bought a small company. We were cleaning 20 pools a week. And so we'd work a day and a half. It was me, a truck. And it was just to kind of get away from the stress and slow down a little bit. And then I realized, well, you can make money here. And so we started growing that. And we ended up growing it to cleaning pools in about 8 different counties in the state of Florida. I had trucks going in every direction. We were cleaning about 350 pools a week. And I was buying and selling routes as we were doing it. So I'd find somebody who wanted to sell and I'd buy it. As I'd build up an area, I'd sell it off. And the swimming pool business is unique where you can make almost more money buying and selling than you could servicing the pools. So I ran that and my oldest son was working with me and I got sick of working in the heat and being outside in the rain and everything else. And so I said to my son, hey, I'm going to go move on to something else. I'll let you have this. And he said, I don't want it. I don't want to work this hard. And so we sold it off in sections. We were so big. If you know Florida at all, we were covering Fort Myers, Sarasota, Okeechobee, Arcadia, up to Lakeland. We had a huge company going in every direction. There was nobody that was wanting to service that kind of service area. Mm-hmm. So we sold it off in sections, and I was doing some consulting, helping people grow their businesses. I met a business broker at a BNI meeting, and I said, what do you do? And he said, I'm a business broker. I'm like, what's that? He told me, and I thought, well, I've been doing that for myself for years. Maybe I should do it. So I said, what do you need? And he said, in the state of Florida and about 16 other states, you need a real estate license. Went and got a real estate license. And I became a broker and didn't know anything about it and been fortunate to be successful since then. Certainly, it's been a lot of work and some years that weren't so good, but we've been fortunate to be able to help a lot of people and do pretty well.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you also own an HVAC company as well. Are you still part of that business today?
So, yes and no. So, I did. So, as a broker, as I mentioned at the beginning, I bought a heating and air company and realized that I didn't belong running a heating and air company. My son, same son who worked me in the pool business, was working for me in that. And I told him, hey, you may need to get another job. I'm going to sell this business. And he and his wife said they wanted to buy it. So they actually bought me out. They own it today. My office is inside their office. So he gets my advice. I'm sure that he doesn't want unsolicited advice on a daily basis. So I'm still around the industry from his eyes. I'm in the office during COVID and all the equipment problems and staffing problems and pricing problems and all that. I'd see it firsthand kind of through his eyes. But the reality is I have nothing to do with the day-to-day operation.
So you clearly have been in and around the industry for decades. And in that time, I mean, you were speaking earlier. I sat in on a little bit of your session. You covered, I think it was about 3 or 4 things that an HVAC or a home service company really should be doing that can help increase. You know, our customers, when they sell, half of them are looking, you know, they want the big paycheck, right? Or, you know, they're forced to sell a business because of divorce or, you know, some of those reasons. So, how does someone know when it's time to sell a business? You've sold many.
Yeah, you know, I think having a plan is part of it. Most people don't. They get to retirement age and say, I'm ready to sell now. And they haven't really thought about it much. And they don't know who to ask. That's the reality. They can't ask their competitors. You shouldn't ask the person who's trying to buy you. You know, it's so most people don't know who to go to. And so they get to the point and then they have a thought in their mind of here's what it's worth. They were at a trade show like this. Somebody stood on stage and said, I sold my business for X amounts, and now they think theirs is worth X amount, and that's kind of the plan. And so my advice to people is start planning now. If you want to sell in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 1 year, get a valuation done. Find out what it's worth. Because obviously, as you mentioned, there's a lot of interest from private equity and other people in the space. Those are professional buyers. I mean, they know what they're doing buying a company, and they're it's in their best interest to buy a company for as little money as they can, right? It's nothing negative to them. Just they're designed to save money. And the more money they can save, the better it is for their return. So my advice is get with somebody like myself. And even if I'm not the guy, there's other talented people in the space. Get them to give you a valuation. Even if, once again, it's 5 years or 10 years out, here's what it's worth today. Knowing what that figure needs to be 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, and then putting a plan in place to get there.
Would you say people have a realistic expectation of what their business is going to sell for, or are they wildly off for the most part?
Most often they're off. I joke, and it's not funny to say. It is funny to say it because it kind of helps me deal with it. I meet with a lot of people who didn't know how to build a business, who didn't know how to market, how to advertise, who didn't know how to hire staff. And so they've just done the work, and they thought that it was worth X amount of dollars. And I sit at a kitchen table with a husband and wife, 60, 70 years old, and I have to tell them, your baby's ugly. For most people, their business is their baby. And I've got to sit across the table and say, there's no value to it. You've done it wrong, which is why I come to events like this, do podcasts like this, do these things, because people don't know who to ask. And so I'm here to say, here's all the people you can ask. Get a valuation done so I don't have to sit at a table 10 years from now and say, hey, you've worked your whole life and there's zero value for it.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's one of the things, and you were kind of implying it, I think, but you don't know what you don't know, right? And so that's why companies like Blue Corona exist, right? I mean, I'm not going to go try to fix my air conditioning unit outside when it's 90 degrees in Charlotte, North Carolina, because I don't know what I'm doing. And oftentimes I talk to folks at whether it be trade shows like this or on calls or whatever, and it's just they don't know what they don't know.
So who to ask.
Right.
That's
and so they have to ask someone. And so it sounds like that's where you come in. So how much of that is, you know, maybe when they think their business is worth $10 million and you tell them, hey, no, it's actually worth $3 million or maybe even less. How much of that is due to, you know, again, they don't know what they don't know versus no one's ever just tried to help them. They haven't had to do this before.
For the reality, both of those things. Right? Many times they haven't even thought about selling until right now they're getting all these phone calls and all these letters from people saying they want to buy their business. Often they're asking the person who's trying to buy them what their business is worth. It's like asking a barber, do you need a haircut, right? Of course you do. And so asking the person who's trying to buy you what your business is worth is not the person to ask. But the reality is they didn't know who to ask. If they haven't met somebody like me who does what I do, they don't know who to call. They don't know who they can ask. They're listening to other people talking. And one of the things I say a lot is people don't brag about the bad deal they got. Nobody's going to say, hey, I sold my business and did it wrong. Everybody's going to say how great it was and how great retirement is. But many times they did it wrong. And so I'm here giving away information. We write articles. I've got YouTube videos out there. So people don't say, I don't know who to ask, that they can look at information and at least get an understanding of that.
But what are some of the things that people most commonly do wrong? To make a bad transaction or maybe to have an unsuccessful sell?
Well, it starts with running the business wrong. You know, poor books and records. Building a business that's not valuable in today's marketplace. So that's the first thing. Second thing, the buyer's dictating to them how this works. They don't have anybody in their corner. They're on their own. And for most people, selling their heating and air company is the first time they've ever sold a business. And for most people, it's the biggest sale of their life. So they go into the biggest transaction of their life and they're by themselves and don't have anybody representing them. And the buyer says, hey, this is the way it works. And they say, okay, because they don't know any different. So
it's kind of like the first time buying a house.
Absolutely. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know who to ask. So you go into a deal and the team across from you with 5 Harvard MBAs says, this is the way it always happens. You say, okay, because I can't tell anybody any different. So it starts with the education on the front. Running a solid business on the front and then the back is the intricate parts of the deal. The reality is the money side is the easy side. It either makes mathematical sense or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You need to sell the business or want to sell the business. The check needs to say this. If it says this, fantastic, cash the check. If it doesn't, it's not the right deal for you. Then there's all the other stuff that comes with it.
So what are the real multiples that people are paying these days for an HVAC, plumbing, electrical, contracting business?
It's a hard question to answer because there's such a range. It's not like every company making $500,000 sells for this because it has to do with location. It has to do with business mix. It has to do with construction exposure. It has to do with all these things. What we typically see is, say, from 3 times to 10 times is real. Now, 10 times, it's going to be a phenomenal business with staff in place and repeat revenue and dominating a market and all these things. And a 2 to 3 times is going to be a smaller mom and pop business just getting started.
You said something interesting there, which is repeat business. And I've heard you over the years talk about the importance of having, not focusing only on something like new construction, but being, you know, a service company. And no one wants to, I think you said it, no one wants to buy a job, they want to buy a business, right? So with that in mind, I mean, what are some of the things that folks can do that to increase the valuation of their business, you know, starting today, that they can put in place?
Absolutely. Four things that I suggest people focus on. One, get themselves out of a van, right?
Work on the business.
Absolutely. Many people, the businesses that I see that are $1 million in sales and less are typically because the owner won't get out of their own way. They're the best technician and they don't trust anybody else. And so they won't grow. They don't do any marketing because who's going to do the work? I only can fix so many air conditioners a day. So they stay in that rut right where they are. That's the first thing. Second thing would be business focused on service repair and replacement. So building a service business and with repeat revenue. Once again, talking about delivering a service for their customers. The third thing is cleaning up their bank account. So many people believe because you're self-employed, you don't have to pay taxes. So they're very creative in their accounting.
That's a nice thought.
Yeah, absolutely. They're very, very creative in their accounting. And if you're going to buy a business and you look at the tax returns in the last 3 years that lost money, how much money are you going to pay for it? I mean, nobody wants to buy a loss. And so cleaning that up is helpful. And then the other thing, and you had already mentioned it, staying away from new construction. I'm not saying you can't make money doing new construction. And reality is with the construction across the country, somebody's got to be doing it. There's money being made. But at the end of the day, a buyer's not looking to buy a company focused on new construction. Oftentimes, the contractors are not loyal. They're squeezing margins and squeezing margins and squeezing margins as opposed to developing a pricing system that's fair for everyone.
So one of the things about, I'm going to go back to point number three that you made. You talked about having clean books, accurate books, right? How common is it for folks to sometimes treat their business checking account like a personal checking account?
Extremely confident.
And kind of where I'm heading with that is how long or how far back in time should you have clean books? Let's say you're looking to sell, sign up on the dotted line tomorrow, right? How many years back should those records be, you know, in tip-top shape?
Minimum of three. Most buyers are going to ask for 3 years financials, but you brought up something earlier. That's my short answer. The long answer is yesterday, because what if you get a divorce? What if you get an illness? What if something happens and you can't turn back the clock and fix 3 years ago stuff? So doing it now, so if anything that comes up, anything that happens, you're in the right position to maximize value for your business.
If someone is looking to exit, let's say 5 years from now, how important is it to have not only that top line revenue, but operating efficiency, right? Because I think a lot of folks are, you know, technicians who go out and start their own business, they think, okay, we did $5 million in revenue last year. So the owner took home $5 million in their bank account. And that's simply not the case. So talk to me a little bit about the difference between, you know, top line revenue, you know, maybe looking attractive versus what you're actually netting at the bottom and bringing home, and that balance between top line revenue and operating efficiency.
Great, great question. And the reality is when a buyer looks at a business, they're going to take both of those things into account. They're typically going to pay a multiple based on net income. So once again, if you're showing negative net income, I don't care if you get a 20 time multiple, it's still zero. So it doesn't do you any good, but it's also going to be, how are your sales? It's going to be, how much growth is there? How much could they improve with inside the business? So typically it's a multiple of net. That's the barometer is growth. If you're doing $2 million in sales, it's going to be a different sale price than one doing $20 million in sales, no matter where the net lies in there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So both of those are extremely important numbers to track and to keep in line. You know, if you're running a company, some people are giving it away. Use that as an example. There's companies out there that are so focused on growth, and that's the vanity number, in my opinion. And so I'm doing all these gross sales. You look at the bottom line, they're making nothing. They're scrambling just to pay the next month's bills because they're giving everything away, and that's where they're getting the money from. There's not a buyer that calls me and says, I want to buy the cheapest company in town. Because they know oftentimes the customers are cheap. And if they come in and raise prices, they're going to lose the customers. So it has an impact on value. So keeping that gross growing and keeping that net in line is extremely important.
I think one of the things that is important for our listeners to know is how important people, having the right people in the right seat on the bus, and how important processes are towards building a business, right? Not a job. You can only do so much wearing multiple hats, right? And so how important is that, you know, having the right people in the right place and having processes so you can, again, work on the business versus in the business?
Extremely. And so that's what a buyer's buying, right? No buyer calls me and says, hey, I want to buy a business that I can work 15 hours in the field and then go back and do paperwork for 8 hours. They want people in place. They don't want to buy a job. And so the better trained those people are, as we all know, one of the biggest problems facing the industry currently is lack of qualified talent. Well, if you've demonstrated that you've got the ability to bring people in, get them trained, and retain them, your business is worth so much more than somebody who's got turnover, because you're building longevity within the customer base and with the employee base.
That's an interesting point that I don't think, I've also never sold a business before, so there's that. But, you know, I didn't think of about, you know, the tenure of employees that are there. And you're right. I mean, I've been with Blue Corona coming up on 10 years. The company's only 15 years old, so I'm a dinosaur in Blue Corona. In Blue Corona years, but in the trades, when, you know, someone else, Joe Schmo down the street, offers a dollar more an hour and that technician jumps, the next thing you know, you don't have enough techs. So with that in mind, I mean, how important is the tenure of employees, or especially at the leadership level, to buyers?
Very important. They're looking for consistency, right? They want somebody that if the owner's gone, the system still runs. And so if you look at when we list a business, I have them fill out an employee kind of roster. Who are they? How long have they been with you? And what do they get paid? Just so a buyer can look at it and say, wow, we've got 15 years average tenure, 5 years average tenure. A lot of them we look at is 6 months average tenure. Mm-hmm. And so then you're questioning, if the business sells, are they going to be there? How loyal are they to the business and to the customers? Or are they just chasing the next 50-cent raise an hour, new ladder on the truck kind of thing?
Yep. So obviously 2023 was an interesting, I'm going to pivot a little bit. 2023 was an interesting year, I'll just say. You know, a lot of our customers had really great years, but not all of them did. And from my perspective and the conversations I'm having, I tend to think it's, hey, COVID hit, the pandemic hit, business was booming. Everyone was focusing on their home, whether they were remodeling, replacing their air conditioner, whatever that is, right? And then 2023 hit, pandemic is behind us, and call it a silent recession, a recession, whatever you want to call it. I'm not an expert and I don't make those calls. But 2023 just wasn't the unicorn years that 2021 and 2022 were. Where do you see the market heading, you know, in the next couple of years, in the next 3 to 5 years, let's say?
So my crystal ball works half as well as yours does. Let's say that first. You know, it seems to me that we're in more of a repair versus replacement economy. It's so weird you asked that. I wrote an article yesterday on LinkedIn and on Facebook talking about you better be able to fix an air conditioner, not just sell one. So I think a lot of people maybe have tightened up a little bit, whether it's election, whether it's a recession, whatever the politically correct terminology for it is, I think people have slowed down. And a lot of people through those COVID years got all new equipment because they were all at home all day long and realized their air conditioner didn't work and they all got new ones. So I think we've seen a softening of the market. I think the beauty is in most parts of the country, summer's hot and winter's cold, you know, and so air conditioning is not something that most people are willing to do without, and heat in the wintertime is not something most people are doing without. So I think owning a business in the trades, once again, I my whole business is about the trades, and I believe in the trades. My family's in the trades. My son's in the trades. And so I believe that it's an incredible business to be in, but there's ups and downs. And as a business owner, you need to be able to plan how to handle those ups and downs.
Well, I think that's why we saw the rise of private equity a couple of years ago just surge into our industry, because they said, holy shit, like this is recession-proof, if you will, right? And to your point, you know, everyone got new systems, so now it's another 10 years, assuming they maintenance, they service those, right? You know, it's going to be another 10 years, hopefully, before they need to see that contractor again. And so it's interesting, and you also made note of the repair versus replacement mindset. I mean, that's exactly what we are hearing from our customers as well and our clients, that, hey, homeowners are a little bit more price conscious these days. I mean, I had a garage door repair company out a couple months ago, and I was thinking about replacing the full garage door, but opted for the repair. Now, I did sign up for the service agreement, so they got me on the hook for that. So Shout out to A1 Garage Door and Tommy Bello over there. But, you know, it's just been interesting. I mean, everyone's, you know, tightening up their pockets a little bit, a little less hesitant to spend.
Well, it goes up and down, right? Everything does. And, you know, I mean, we can't have great years all the time. It wouldn't balance itself out. And so I think that's real.
Well, and I think it's important to remember that. Business is an infinite game, right? And, you know, unless you sell and exit, right? But business is an infinite game. It's never ending. There's going to be ups and downs. It's never going to be always just sunshine and rainbows, right? And so it's how do we, maybe 2023 wasn't great, but how do we get back to that? Or how do we just make incremental improvements, whether it's in our marketing, our operations, to drive that business forward? And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of our customers doing, is they're really focusing internally this year, you know, to help get back to those great operating margins and really focusing internally. So interesting that you're hearing that as well.
Yeah, I'm seeing that a lot nationwide. So that's, you know, obviously we're a weather-driven business, right? And so, and I think most parts of the country had a mild winter. And so I think that has an impact on it as well. If the weather's not there, if things don't run, they don't break. And so mix that with a softening potentially of the economy, and it's a double-edged sword.
So what happens if someone's thinking about selling their business, or they've been working with a broker, and then a year like 2023 hits, and maybe it wasn't as great as the past couple of years, and now whether that be top-line revenue or whatever, just wasn't what it was. So what does that do to potential buyers? Does that limit the pool? Do they look at that and say, just ask questions like, what happened there? Or how does a buyer approach that, and what should an owner do who is looking to sell where maybe, you know, the last year wasn't so hot, but they know it's time to get out?
Yeah, you know, the reality is it's going to affect the price, right? If you're a buyer and the business you were looking at was here and now it's producing here, you're not going to pay here price.
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense. And so when we are working with sellers, I'm always saying, hey, make sure you don't take your foot off the gas, right? So I've seen people try to cut expenses and stop marketing and stop bringing people on and stop
marketing.
It's going to
give me a heart attack.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, and so they shut off the spigot, right? And then through the process, the buyer says, okay, give me your most recent P&L, and they look at it, the numbers are down. Well, now we're renegotiating because that's not the business they were looking at buying. And so it has an impact on it. And so I'm consistently preaching, don't stop. Keep this bus going forward, because they're going to ask just before closing where the numbers are. And if we're getting beat up, they're going to expect the price concession, rightfully so.
Yep. I look at it kind of like when you're buying a home and your realtor tells you no big purchases, right? Like, don't go out and buy a new car. Don't go out and buy a new couch or what have you. You know, wait till after the sale has gone through. So it sounds like it's very similar. Like, hey, don't take your foot off the gas pedal.
Well, and on the other side, if you're the buyer of the house and the seller of the house stops mowing the yard, stops taking care of the pool, stops fixing anything there, and you get there for your final inspection, everything's broken, the pool is clean, green. Are you going to still pay the same amount of money for that place? Well, no, it's not what you thought you were buying.
Right. Right. Well, Patrick, that covers all our questions. I've had a great conversation, and we appreciate having you on. We're similar mindset. I'd like to educate as much as possible. People will come if they want to work with us. Great. Not just you have the knowledge to hopefully make your business better. So appreciate you joining us as well. And how can people get in touch with you if they want to think about selling?
Absolutely. My website, businessmodificationgroup.com. I've got a YouTube channel. I'm active on LinkedIn, Facebook. So certainly reach out to me on any of those channels. I'm happy to help any way that I can. On our website, we offer a free valuation. Fill out the questionnaire. It's a range, so we're not asking for in-depth, full-on valuation. But it's an easy way for somebody to get a barometer of where they're at. And so they can do that for free. There's no obligation. We're not going to spam you. Come on, take a look and see what it's worth. And if I can answer any questions, call me, email me, text me. I'm happy to help any way I can.
Awesome. Well, folks, there you have it. Patrick Lang of Business Modification Group. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right.